You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Well, welcome in another week of baseball as we bring you into MLB.com Extras in the American League West edition. Wow, a lot going on. Plenty of drama out in Anaheim. The Astros starting to position for that big trade to help them down the stretch. Texas not going anywhere. The Oakland A's are surging some juicy rumors around that team. And then the Seattle Mariners just have to figure out how to score runs. We cover those topics and more this week. MLB.com Extras, American League West edition. Brian, you know, the Astros just kind of keep cruising, everything according to plan, or maybe exceeding plan just a little bit. There's a number of angles we could go with this, but it's been a week and a half, 2 weeks since the draft. I see that Daz Cameron has signed along with the first two picks, Bregman and Tucker. I'm guessing that in that front office, as much as they've been visible and available lately, they just got to be thrilled with the way this draft went yet again.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of a couple of years ago when they drafted Correa number one, and they manipulated the signing bonus slots a little bit, and they were able to get McCullers and Rio Ruiz, and they sort of did the same thing here. And Daz Cameron was kind of the guy that really held the key to all this, because he was probably a top 10 talent as far as draft prospects, and they ended up getting him, much later than that, and with hopes that they could sign him away from a college scholarship. And it's a guy who comes from good bloodlines. His dad's got a lot of money, so it's not like money matters a whole lot. But at the end of the day, they were able to pay him $4 million and get him in the fold. So they get three players of the top seven draft prospects now ranked by MLB.com. They signed those this year. They have to be thrilled. The proof's going to be in the pudding. We'll check back 5 years and see what the draft looks like. But it couldn't have gone much better after last year's. Couldn't have gone much worse, at least at the top of the draft.
I just saw Bregman last week at the national team tryouts, basically, the Tournament of Stars in Cary, North Carolina. He's obviously a superstar. And Cameron, he's one of those guys, and you probably had this conversation. I don't know how many times I asked guys over the years, who's the best teammate you ever had? And I'm telling you, Mike Cameron's name, I wouldn't say that it came up every single time, but it was something absurd, like 75-80% of the time you'd hear Mike Cameron. If Daz Cameron is anything like his old man, I think the Astros really stolen one.
Oh, I think so. And, the Astros are big on that. They're big on makeup and how they think guys will fit in. And you're right about his dad, Mike. I mean, he never played for the Astros, and I never really had a chance to cover him on a day-to-day basis. But my limited dealings with him, I always walked away and said, man, Mike Cameron, that's one heck of a guy. Now, you got to be a heck of a guy and a good ball player, too, or it doesn't mean anything at the end of the day. And the Astros are thinking they got both. And Daz Cameron, even though he's a high school kid, I think is someone who could move pretty quickly through the system. And they're starting to get some real depth now at some positions. Kyle Tucker, their number two overall pick in center field, or Cameron can play center field. They're really starting to stack up these prospects, which, could come handy around trade deadline time when some of these guys who are in AA and AAA now maybe become a trade bait as they try to get a starting pitcher.
Well, and that, that's going to segue us nicely into the next phase for this team. We're on the cusp of the All-Star game, and, everyone wants to know if Altuve can – get enough votes to pass Infante and be the starting second baseman. And that's a nice story, and we'll all keep an eye on that. But we're headed right toward that trade deadline. And for the first time in a long time, it's an interesting time of year for the Astros in a different way. It's been an interesting time in recent years because they had been dealing. They've got to be looking, but what exactly are they looking for?
Well, they're looking for a proven starting pitcher. I think they're looking for someone who is on a two or three month rental. I don't think they're going to be interested in, let's say Cole Hamels is one of the names out there who's got the big contract. I don't think they're interested in that. They want the next level of guy, someone they can get for 2 months, try to get the most out of them. Then at the end of the year, they still have some financial flexibility and free agency to do what they want. But they want someone who can come in and help them as well. I mean, Johnny Cueto's a name. Scott Kazmir's a name. Mike Leake is another name. The problem is there's a lot of players, there are a lot of teams still in contention that are going to be interested in the same players. So it might take a little while to play out, and I know they would rather make a trade sooner than later. That way they can get, three or four extra starts out of whoever they get, because they're going to have to give up some prospects to get them. But, you know, that's what they're looking for. And they need another starter just to plug in that rotation. Keuchel is Keuchel. He's great. McHugh is seemed to have righted the ship. You like what McCullers is doing, but he's going to hit a pitch or an innings limit that he's never been before at some point. How far do you push him? Scott Feldman's coming back. So you need that extra guy in there to help you the last few months to try to close this thing out.
The challenge with that, of course, is always, what are you willing to give up? And as you pointed out in an earlier answer in this podcast, they are starting to stockpile prospects, but it's so hard. I mean, I know teams have such a difficult time sometimes letting go of those guys. You get a sense for how willing to wheel and deal that Luno and company are going to be?
Well, I think they're going to be willing to wheel and deal. What they give up, it's hard to say because, like we talked about earlier, they haven't been in this position before. We haven't really seen them do this. So it will be interesting if they do make a trade of this nature. Who are they going to give up? I mean, where do they draw the line? Do they draw a line at a Josh Hader or do they give up a Brett Phillips, who's an up-and-coming center fielder now at Double-A? You know, you got these other outfielders coming behind him, but Phillips is a guy who could help you maybe next year. Tony Kemp is kind of a guy with that position playing at Triple-A. But, they're going to have to give up, multiple guys. Is Mark Appel involved in it, perhaps in the deal down the road? Who knows? But they're going to have to give up multiple prospects. I mean, you were around when the Astros were trading away the Pences and the Bournes, and they were getting three or four prospects in return. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to give away three or four prospects to get that one starting pitcher.
What about Mark Appel? Is there perceived value in him out there, do you think, among other teams?
Well, I think there has to be because he's still relatively young. He's still got the stuff. I mean, he's still got the 98-mile-per-hour fastball. He's still got a good slider. You wish he was further along than he is. His first start at AAA didn't go so well. But, Appel, it has taken him some time to adjust at every level he's been at. And, I know that's probably frustrating for the Astros because it's been 2 years since they signed him, and they really thought that, by now he'd be pitching in the major leagues considering he was a senior and all he had done at Stanford. So, but considering he struggled at AA to begin, he struggled when he went to Lancaster. Now here he is at AAA, his first start. He struggled a little bit. So, I think there's value, but, I think the Astros still are high on him, and I think that they would like to see him make his major league debut with the Astros. I mean, he was the number one pick. They passed on some pretty big-name guys to take Mark Appel. And, I think there's a lot of pride involved. But, hey, we want Mark Appel to be successful, and we want him to be successful here in Houston. So it's going to be an interesting couple of months to see if he can get it ironed out at AAA and whether how quickly they decide to bring it up.
All right. Well, I don't know if there's an obvious answer to this or maybe there's no answer to this, but I know it's not the Cardinals, but when you think about teams the Astros, might have some luck dealing with in a friendly way, what teams come to mind? Is there a list? Do you get a sense if there's, that there are three or four or five teams that they, work pretty well with? Again, I think we can we can safely assume that they're probably not going to be doing any deals with the Cardinals anytime soon. But who are their allies, I guess?
Well, that's kind of hard to say, Dave. I mean, like you said earlier, there's still a lot of teams in the race. With the second wild card, there's very few teams that are going to be out of the race at this point and willing to make the deals. Oakland is one of them, but you're talking about a team in the division. They made trades with teams in the divisions before, and I don't think much of that really scares off Jeff Luno. I think he tries to make the best deal available no matter who it is. I certainly think the Cardinals, with everything that's gone on with the Cardinals, I would be shocked if they made a deal with the Cardinals at any point. But, it remains to be seen. I think it just matters who's got the arms and who's more willing to deal with the Astros at this point and what kind of package the Astros can offer up in return. Because Luno has not been shy about making trades, and I need to go back and look, but boy, I bet he's made trades with over half the teams already in the three plus years he's been on the job.
Yeah. All right, last thing for you, and I think this is going to be a challenging one, Brian. I'm not sure. You might have to dig deep for this, but is there a better story on the field, competitive story on this team than Will Harris? I mean, we hear plenty about so many of the other guys on this team, but is Will Harris maybe the best story, though?
Well, I think he could be. And he kind of gets lost in the shuffle with the young kids coming up. And he was a waiver claim, so he wasn't like he'd make a lot of headlines when they acquired him. And he was their first acquisition of the offseason, acquiring him off waivers from the D-backs. And you know, then they went out and signed a couple of big-name relievers, Gregerson and some of the other guys with Nisek and even Joe Thatcher. So he kind of flew under the radar a little bit, but, you know, he's come on, and, you know, he's been just absolutely incredible. And you talk about all-star consideration, Will Harris has probably put together an all-star first half, but when you're not a name anybody recognizes, and you're a middle reliever, it's kind of hard to get in there. And I'm sure AJ Hinch this week, when the Royals are in town, has probably got Ned Yost ear, especially since he's on the staff, and probably telling Ned, hey, you know, Keuchel, we know will be there. Altuve, if he doesn't get elected, should be there. But you know, look at Will Harris. Look at what he's done and numbers he put up, and he can help you win that American League game. Just a great story, and he's been a bigger part of this bullpen as anybody. And as the season's gone on, we've seen him pitch in bigger and bigger roles. And now that Chad Qualls is on the DL, you know, he's become one of the seventh, eighth inning guys, and just a good story and good for him.
You know, it is one of the true upsides of the new All-Star format is that a guy like Will Harris could get real consideration because of the competitive aspect to it now. So that's one that I'm keeping an eye on. I think he's got to be on the All-Star team. Brian, you're always, as you know, on my All-Star team, man. I look forward to doing it again soon.
All right, Dave, sounds good.
Sitting in today, a special appearance from Matt Hicks. Matt, how you doing, man?
I'm fine, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. Well, you're out in Baltimore enjoying the crab cakes and the Inner Harbor, I trust.
Yeah, it's great. It's almost like a homecoming for me. I grew up in the D.C. suburbs, but once I got to high school and college with some friends, became a big Oriole fan and loved making the trips from the D.C. area up to Old Memorial Stadium at 33rd, and just brings back great memories to be here.
Well, you know, look, Baltimore, Babe Ruth and Matt Hicks. That's the way I've always seen it.
Not quite on the same level, but yeah, sure.
Similar. We're looking for those tie-ins. Look, this Rangers team, this is the first time you and I have had a chance to talk about this season. I can't figure them. I mean, they're streaky as all get out, recently pulling out of another tailspin, but they've had the hot streaks as well. They're still a better than 500 team. It wasn't that long ago, Matt, that you guys were like a game and a half out of first place. So you tell me, who are the Texas Rangers?
I think the answer to that is we're still searching. You know, it's almost halfway into the season, and I'm not sure this team really has an identity. But one thing that I think has been consistent for the club is regardless of who's been plugged into the starting rotation has come through with shining colors. You know, yesterday we got a bounce-back start from Wandy Rodriguez, who got knocked around his last time out, but he tossed five innings of one-run ball, got some early support, and was the winning pitcher. And Wandy's become somewhat of a road warrior. Yesterday was his eighth road start, and the Rangers are 7-1 when Wandy starts on the road. And you can point to all of the starters. You know, Giovanni Gallardo, a guy that the Rangers acquired in the offseason, they expected him to give the club innings. And he's given us not just quality innings, but, you know, right now he's on a string of 23 and a third consecutive scoreless innings. You know, Nick Martinez, a rough-and-tumble rookie season in 2014. And he's had some shaky starts of late, but, I mean, he's given the club, you know, quality performances all year long. You know, Colby Lewis, who's going tonight, has been, I think, better than expected. So, I mean, this has been a starting rotation that has been able to give this team an opportunity to be in just about every ballgame.
Cash, you know, you almost forget because it happened at the very beginning of spring training, but you really almost forget, like, what would that rotation be with Yu Darvish if you were healthy?
Exactly. You know, Yu Darvish threw one inning in spring training, and then, you know, the word was, he felt a little twinge in his elbow, but things should be fine. And then the next day, all of a sudden, we're finding out that, you know, he's probably going to have Tommy John surgery. And it's like, oh, okay, so the ace just went down. And then at the beginning of the season, Derek Holland, who, of course, was limited because of injury last year to only six starts late in the year. Okay, well, so now Derek becomes your number one. But the way that they worked him in spring training, they were going to have him start the fifth game of the season, the home opener. So he starts the home opener, goes one inning. And then he gets a subscapular strain, and he's been out all year. So this is a team that's been able to cobble together this starting rotation and doesn't have its number one and two starters. So, yeah, if Darvish and Holland were here, you know, there'd be two guys that wouldn't be here. Chichi Gonzalez probably wouldn't be here. Wandy Rodriguez probably wouldn't be here in this rotation right now. And, you know, when Chichi's come up and he's given the rotation a terrific boost for what he's been able to do. So it speaks to the depth of the organization, the resourcefulness of the Texas Rangers to be in the position that they're in right now.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. And, of course, have worked around some bullpen scuffles here and there as well. Now, we're bumping up close to the All-Star break, and the next big date on the calendar is the trade deadline. And I guess the question is, you know, hovering around 500, a little better than 500 at the moment. But with the Astros, you know, continuing to kind of open things up a little bit in the division, what do you see the Rangers doing? Are they going to be pretty active? And then what do you think the angle is going to be?
Well, you know, here today, and the club hasn't announced any moves today, but here today we're anticipating that Josh Hamilton will come off the disabled list and to be active and be in the starting lineup. So with Hamilton returning, and with some others close to returning, and with the club being a game over 500, I would expect that if the Rangers are still knocking on the door of first place in the American League West, that John Daniels will do whatever needs to be done to make this team even more competitive. Now, you know, here recently, you know, about a week ago, the hot rumor of Cole Hamels being acquired. Although I think that, like, my broadcast partner Eric Nadell and I would agree that right now, for this team, for its a more immediate need, as opposed to another starting pitcher, would be to get some help toward the back end of the bullpen. Sean Tolleson's been terrific, you know, 10 for 10 in save opportunities. But getting to Tolleson from the rotation has been a bit of a struggle. So some help in that regard, I think, would probably be the first big need that this club is looking at to not just staying competitive, but perhaps being a threat to win the division.
Yeah, don't be afraid to add a little left-hander or something out there, too. I mean, I know Freeman helped a little bit, but goodness gracious. What about Jeff Banister? What's your impression, Ben? I mean, we are, you know, almost halfway through this thing, and his first year at the helm of the Rangers. So what's your takeaway?
Well, I tell you what has been most impressive about the Jeff Banister has been, you know, with the movement of personnel, because the Rangers, again, have had a number of player moves throughout the course of the season. You know, so many different pitchers, so many different position players. He's been able to put together a lineup just about every night that has been a competitive lineup. And he seems to be one of these guys in the new wave of on-field managers that has been able to get the most out of combining traditional baseball knowledge with analytics. And so what we have seen has been essentially a manager getting the most out of his club. And he will, when he's giving his reasons for why he's got the lineup the way it is, why he's got, say, Rougned Odor hitting leadoff, or why for a few games he had Joey Gallo hitting second in the lineup ahead of Prince Fielder. He had not just one reason, but a variety of reasons as to why this was being done, why the Rangers have put the Gallo in the outfield, for example. The success of a utility guy like a Hanser Alberto coming up and being productive both offensively and defensively, he has been able to integrate all of that analytics information that the club is giving him and use it to the best of the team's advantage. So I think that, you know, there's Jeff Banister and a group of other managers, maybe a half a dozen or so managers in the major leagues, and it might even be more now, that are able to incorporate this information into the daily aspect of what the team is doing on the field, and that's what we see as his strength, his ability to combine that with sort of a personal touch, being able to relate to the players so that they understand why these decisions are being made and why they're doing what they're doing.
You touched on something there, and that's Joey Gallo in the outfield, and you know, think of him as a left fielder generally. That's where he's gotten most of the activity. But what I saw the other day, I just happened to be, you know, looking through lineups and stuff, and I thought, oh, he's starting in center field. What's going on there, and how did he look?
Well, number one, that was a game in Toronto, and if you know about, you know, the way Rogers Center is set up. It's like a symmetric field. There's nothing that's funny about the outfield. And so he didn't have a problem with putting him there. He talks about Gallo as being a very good athlete. He has been. He's been. He might not be getting the best reads in left field, but he's been able to make up for it. He's made good plays out there. The one game that he played in center in Toronto, he was only out there for five innings, and he got one chance. It was a routine fly ball, and he handled it. But the reason that the lineup was that way that day was to kind of give Leonis Martin a day off. He has been really struggling at the plate here of late, and he just wanted to give him a day off. So as it turns out, that was the game we won in Toronto where we got a 3-0 lead going into the sixth inning. And then he brought Martin into the game anyway to play in center, and he moved Gallo over into left, and Martin ended up getting a couple of at-bats and actually got a hit in the game. So it was just kind of to give Martin a mental break. But from what we've seen from Gallo, who is a third baseman by trade, he's got a terrific arm. He has an outfield assist from left, throwing out a guy at third. And he makes up for his mistakes with his athleticism and his speed. And if we needed to play him again in center, I don't think Jeff Banister would hesitate.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. Pretty good stuff. Well, listen, Matt, as always, we appreciate the time. I know you're busy back there in Baltimore. You got a game tonight. But this, hopefully we've left you enough time to get out there on the concourse, sign some autographs, tell some stories about you and the babe, and maybe we'll get a chance to catch up again later on this year.
That sounds good. Thanks a lot, Dave. I appreciate it.
It's kind of funny. When you think the Angels are back, got it figured out. You know, they've been hovering here, you know, anywhere between, oh, let's call it, you know, 2.5 games out, 4 or 5 games out. They're in the division race. All of a sudden, there's tension, or at least reported tension, between the front office and the coaching staff. And Albert Pujols is thrown into this thing, information and the path it takes in the organization. What in the world is going on?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of the last thing that the Angels want. I mean, here they are just trying to figure themselves out, trying to find their footing and gain some ground on the Astros, and you have a report like this that comes out. Ken Rosenthal of FoxSports.com reported during Monday's game. I think that's when the report came out. Basically, the gist of it is that the front office, led by General Manager Jerry Dipoto, believes that the coaching staff, according to the report, is not doing a good job of filtering the statistical analytical information that the front office provides down to the players, either because they don't understand it or are not finding a good enough way to communicate it to the players, or because they just don't like it and don't want to. And according to the report, that was kind of the genesis of a couple of eventually tense meetings between the front office and the coaching staff, and then between the front office, coaching staff, and the players. The clubhouse was closed Sunday. Sunday was a day game. The clubhouse was closed most of pregame, and Socha said afterwards that it was regarding scouting information. And according to the report, that's when Jerry Dipoto told the players that the front office is going to provide the information to the players directly, and then they could choose whether or not they want to use it. But, you know, there was some tension there, according to the report, between Dipoto and the coaches, who may feel like he's challenging the way they do their job. And then, according to the report, Albert Pujols chimed in during the meeting on Sunday to defend the coaching staff. Now, having not been there, it's impossible to know just how heated this was and how big or small a deal this really is. Part of me wants to say that stuff like this happens with any team in any season, especially when there's been some frustration with the performance, and that the only difference with this one is that it actually got out. The other part of me says maybe this is a little bit more of a big deal simply because of the history between Jerry Dipoto and Mike Socha. Jerry Dipoto and Mike Socha were at odds when Dipoto first got the job after the 2011 season. Mike Socha was furious that Dipoto fired hitting coach and good friend Mickey Hatcher in May 2012. And for the better part of those first 2 years, you know, they disagreed a lot in terms of the incorporation of analytics and sabermetrics and how they would use that information on the field. They disagreed on other things in terms of what roles players would fill, in-game strategies, all sorts of things. I mean, it was a classic case of a young GM coming into a situation where a manager has been there for a while and had success. Two guys who are really competitive, two guys who bumped heads. And, you know, this thing kind of got to a head by the end of the 2013 season, and the prevailing thought was that one of them would be let go. And what ended up happening was that Artie Moreno decided to keep them both and basically told them, look, you guys got to figure this out. You got to figure out a way to work together better and make us better. And then, you know, everything I heard after that 2013 season, that the following off season and going into the 2014 season was that Mike Socia and Jerry DePoto were getting along better. They were communicating a lot more effectively, and that they had figured out a way to make this whole thing work. They reconstructed the coaching staff together, and, you know, they go off and they reel off 98 wins just last season, and it seems like everything's great. And now we have this come out, which could be just one little thing that happened, disagreement over the weekend, or it could be something bigger. Who knows? The one thing that I will say about this is that winning does tend to solve everything, as evidenced by last season. You know, you win 98 games, you win a division, you reel off a nice little winning streak, everybody's happy and getting along again. But this is interesting, not just because of the history between DePoto and Socia, but also because of the contractual situation coming up. Jerry DePoto had two club options on his initial contract. His last club option was exercised at the beginning of the year. So he's coming back next year. He's coming back for the 2016 season. Mike Socia signed through 2018, but he can opt out of his contract at the end of this year. He'd leave $18 million on the table, but if he's not happy here, if he feels like he could go to Philadelphia, which has a very interesting situation going on with Andy McPhail taking over, and it's close to where Mike Socia grew up, or if he could go to Los Angeles, or who knows. If this thing doesn't work out, Mike Socia is within his right to opt out of his contract and find another opportunity. Everybody always assumes that he wouldn't go anywhere, and I would still be surprised if Mike Socia went anywhere. He loves it here. He loves working for Artie Moreno. He's very familiar with the organization, and he loves being in a situation where the owner spends money on the roster. But it's something to watch, especially with this report that came out. If the two sides continue to bump heads, who knows? And if they don't win this year, maybe Mike Socia at the end of the year says, you know what, I think I've done my time here, and it's time to move on. It's going to be really interesting to watch.
Well, I should say, and it's one of those things that, you know, from a distance, Alden, I mean, you know, you mentioned it last year, winning his team in Major League Baseball, at least during the regular season. But then this entire season has been drama-filled. I mean, it is Southern California, so, you know, maybe we should expect it. But, you know, from Josh Hamilton to this, the play clearly has not been at the level folks expected this year. Just seems like there's a lot of extra nonsense around this team.
Yeah, it really is. And you know what? And I go back to the on-the-field product, though. You start winning, and all this tends to go away. You start losing, you fall below expectations. These things tend to bubble up to the forefront a little bit. I think the interesting thing about it, too, is this report came out, and I don't want to jump to conclusions, but, I mean, I'm almost certain of this. This report came out because somebody wanted this to come out. And I think the first signs of dysfunction within an organization is when somebody does want something like this to come out. Usually when, and just speaking in generalities here, usually when there's structure, usually when people are getting along, usually when people are on the same page, stuff like this doesn't get out. So the fact that this even got out, I think, is a bad sign for the Angels.
Yeah, I'd agree. Now, they're in the middle of a series where the Yankees took the opener on Monday. And then after that, after the series, interesting road trip, you know, Texas, Colorado, and then four in Seattle before the All-Star break. Now, the road is always a difficult place for just about everybody. Interesting way for the first half to end for this team. And I guess, you know, you can look at it two ways, an opportunity to end on a real high note you know, winning some games on the road, staying within, you know, shouting distance of the Astros, or it could be a critical, tough time for them into that break.
Yeah, and I think the series that everybody's going to watch for is the series this weekend against the Rangers. Josh Hamilton was just activated off the disabled list on Tuesday, and the Angels are coming in there on Friday. When he first hurt his hamstring, everybody was wondering, is Josh Hamilton going to be ready to face the Angels when they come back? And, well, here they are. They're coming into Texas now this weekend, and Josh Hamilton's going to be there, and that's going to be a tough ballpark to play in. And, you know, you talk to a couple of people around the game, and everybody keeps talking about the Astros as, you know, everybody's so impressed with what they're doing in terms of how those young pitchers are coming up, how they fortified their bullpen, and just how powerful and dangerous that lineup is with the ability to hit home runs at any time. This Rangers team, it has been right there pretty much all year, and a lot of scouts that I've talked to have pointed to the Rangers as the team that they feel like could really make some noise in the American League West, because they've kind of stayed in the race a little bit, and now they're just getting healthier. Josh Hamilton's just the first one. Joey Gallo got sent down, but they expect him to come back up and contribute at some point as well. They got some pitchers coming off the DL that are going to help them. And Angels fans know very well just how much trouble they've had playing at Rangers Ballpark. That place has given them nightmares the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I think this is going to be a really big series for them this weekend, not just because Josh Hamilton is coming back.
Yep, I agree. I agree, Alden. And I'll tell you what, there's no more maybe fascinating, dramatic team to follow right now than these Angels, and you're right there on top of it. As always, great stuff, Alden. Appreciate it, and we'll look forward to doing it again real soon.
Sure thing.
With Greg John joining us out from sunny San Diego, California. The team enjoyed an off day. In fact, let's get right to it. Greg, you guys are racking up quite a tax bill. It's like a long, long trip in California for the kids. You guys are going to save a lot of money.
It's nice, though. They're staying in California. Usually it seems like we hit California and hit Texas and hit the East Coast. I mean, they've done a nice job of one trip in California. We're kind of close hops from Anaheim to San Diego to Oakland and then back home. So it's nice to have a little consolidated California trek. And the weather hasn't been unbelievable. The start's been a little bit overcast in Anaheim, but and it's about 90 up in Seattle this week, so kind of ironic, but it's not a bad day in San Diego, and we'll certainly take it. It's gorgeous down here.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a bad day in San Diego. So it starts with a quick two-gamer there tonight, but let's talk about this team in the weekend they just finished in Anaheim, because my gosh, what, you know, a couple of big scares there, and as I understand it, everybody's okay, but on Saturday, you know, it's Robinson Cano taking one right off the dome, and then Felix leaves the game early on Sunday amid concerns that, you know, maybe something was wrong. And it turns out, what, everybody's good, right? Everything's okay.
Yep. About as freak an accident as you can get with Cano. You just like to think you can go sit in the dugout between innings and not have to worry about getting beaned. But he took one right off the temple with just a – when the Angels are playing, just warming up in the infield doing their throws, and the shortstop throws one over Pujols' head and right off Cano's noggin. So it looked pretty serious at the time. I mean, you get hit in the head not seeing a ball coming and a pretty crisp throw, and it looked like he might have some issues, and they were checking him out, and of course, turned out all right. He passed the concussion test. He was back in the lineup the next day, so pretty good scare there. And the Felix on Sunday was just the weather. It was hot. It was about 90 in Anaheim on Sunday. It was the hottest day when we were there and muggy, and he was zipping along on the numerically. He had, you know, six innings of one hitter and had a 1-0 lead, but started cramping up and just get a little dehydrated, and he was up about 96 pitches, and they took him out after that, and then they end up losing in 10 innings. So tough no decision for him, tough loss for the Mariners, and they're still kind of just seem to be treading water. It's just kind of fighting to try to get some traction right now.
Yeah, well said. And I don't know how else really to explain it. It's kind of a long run of basically frustration, 8 games under 500. And, you know, at the very beginning, we talked about it. You know, there's this there was an optimism around this team despite a slow start. You know, Lloyd McClendon talked about this, a team destined for greatness. You know, as time passes and you start looking how much sand's left in that hourglass this year, what's the sense? I mean, it's still optimistic or starting to get a little concerned?
Well, you have to be concerned. It's so simple, the issue. I mean, they've continued to get good pitching despite, you know, a couple injuries to their rotation there. But when you look, I can give you one stat that'll pretty much lay it out. 25 of their last 31 games, they've scored three runs or less. So that's just not a formula to win baseball games. It doesn't matter how good your pitching is. And their pitching's good enough, even with that, to kind of keep them, you know, afloat and kind of about 500 over that stretch. But you don't want to start picking up games, and to do that, they got to start hitting, and they just haven't had it consistently. You know, kind of where they have to have it, and that's the heart of that lineup. And they get a little help elsewhere, so they just haven't clicked them. You know, when they had Cruz going early and nobody else really helping, and now he's cooled off a little bit, and Seager's been pretty steady, but they're kind of waiting for Cano still to get going, they brought in Trumbo, and he really hasn't hit much yet, and just not getting a lot out of some other guys like Ackley and Zunino, and some guys you really came into the year thinking could help, and so there they are. I mean, you like to think they got the talent. You look at those guys, and McClendon keeps saying, hey, you look at all those guys at the back of their baseball cards, pretty good, and they're going to get there. They're going to produce that, but they got to see it. You got to have it on the field, as you say, that the time is ticking. We're getting towards the All-Star break, and at that point, you start to kind of see where you're at. But they got a nice stretch here if they can put it together. They're playing good teams. You know, they got to make some hay. They play Oakland four, and then they got the Tigers coming in for three in Seattle, and then the Angels for four more before the break. So they got to make some hay there, I would think, kind of get themselves in position at that All-Star break to kind of see where they're at.
Yeah, well, you know, another story, Greg, has been, Fernando Rodney, not great, you know, hasn't pitched, you know, terribly well. And Carson Smith has stepped in lately. And how about that, you know, a little Wally Pipp kind of situation here. Carson Smith has done a really nice job in that closer role, even though he's, you know, not the closer. And Fernando Rodney isn't really either. I guess maybe there isn't a closer. What is the situation in that bullpen?
Well, it's Smith, closer without, I guess, the official title. As Lloyd says, I have not anointed him the closer, but certainly when the situation comes up and they're going for a save, he's the guy coming in with the one exception of the other night in Anaheim, which it was interesting. They brought in Carson in the eighth, but it made sense. It was a Trout and Pujols coming to the plate. Smith has pitched extremely well against them in his brief time, and brought him in to face the big guys wanting to keep the lead in the eighth and saying, hey, that's when we got to preserve the lead. It doesn't do any good to have your closer ready in the ninth if you don't have the lead. So they went with Smith in the eighth, came in with Rodney, picked up his first save in about 3 weeks there. But Rodney's pitched pretty well since he got out of that closer situation, and he's kind of working on some things, getting squared away in more of a setup role, and has been thrown better. So Smith is certainly 5 for 5 in save situations, and he's a young kid. He's been very, very impressive since he came up last September. Certainly one of the shining lights this year again. He's just about 1.45 ERA and been lights out. He doesn't walk many guys. He's got a big slider, heavy slider, sinker combination that's tough for guys to hit and kind of a weird arm angle. And he's been real good. So I don't see any reason to move him out. And I think Lloyd's view right now is, hey, let's get this thing. If we can get Rodney squared away. And he just seems like lights out, ready to take that job back, then hey, maybe you do it. But for now, like Lloyd says, we got to win ball games. And right now that combination seems to be Smith coming in and closing.
Yeah, you know, Furbush has pitched well. Mark Lowe has been ridiculously good. There's the makings of plenty in that bullpen. You get back though to scoring runs and trying to compete offensively. So, you know, we're on the cusp of July, and that's always a big month in the baseball summer. What's your sense? What's as that month starts to unravel or lay itself out? What do you see this team doing? Are they going to be able to go out and get that piece that will turn the offense around? Is there enough time, or do they start thinking about retooling for next year?
Well, it's interesting because I think they feel like, and they certainly felt like when they did it, that they went out and did that early, that they made the move for Trumbo, and certainly that was Renzick's saying, hey, we got to help this offense and let's go do it before the July 31st trade deadline. And it was made in June, which makes perfect sense if that guy, you know, produces like you hope. But right now Trumbo hitting about $1.50 since they picked him up. So they got to get more out of him. And certainly he's another guy with a baseball card says he's going to give you more than that. I've talked to him. He's first to admit that getting traded midseason was kind of a tough situation, just getting reacclimated in a new team and things. And he was traded before in the off season. Said, you know, that was a whole totally different situation. You kind of have the spring and the, kind of the winter to get your head straight, and spring to introduce yourself and get comfortable. And getting thrown in midseason, it was a bit of an adjustment for him, but he says he's feeling more comfortable, and they got to get him going, get another big bat in that lineup, and really though, Cano has shown some signs, and you see some steps, but it's got to be more consistent. They got to kind of get Cruz back to being that threat. And you'd think during the hot months he should be hitting pretty well, and keep Seager pretty steady and doing what he does, and you can build on that. The same pieces they talked about, you just kind of got to get them all going at the same time, and get a little help elsewhere in that lineup. And the difference between 4 runs a game and 3 runs a game doesn't sound like much, but it can win you a lot of ball games. If you just get another run, that's kind of the formula they said coming in. We got to average 4 runs a game, and if we do that with our pitching staff, we'll be pretty good. So it doesn't sound like a huge tick, but it's a big one. You can make it and just be more consistent. With 4 or 5 runs a game rather than 1 and 2. They can do it. They got guys that can do it. 3 run homer. Can get you big places. They're 7th in the AL in homers, but they've a huge percentage of their homers have been solo home runs. If you look at it, I don't have the number in front of me, but it's something like 52 out of 70 something. I mean, it's ridiculous. They just haven't had the guys on base to get what they need out of those home runs, and that's part of it. They just got to get guys on. They got to make hay when they get a chance. So I guess we'll see how it rolls. They still got 3-plus months to do it, and that's a lot of baseball. But like you said, they do have to start seeing it.
Yeah, about 15 points below league average as a team and on-base percentage, and that might be it right there, right? I mean, that little tick might be the big difference. Well, there's still time left. That's the good news, Greg, and there's still sunshine in Southern California. Enjoy San Diego and in Oakland, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, Dave. Appreciate it.
With Jane Lee. And Jane, first, I mean, it's been a little while since we've talked, and I will say maybe that's all the A's needed, was a little break from you and me chatting about them, because I feel like it's a different team since you and I talked last maybe 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, they're kind of, I mean, they seem to be clicking on all cylinders. If you take away, they were swept by the Royals, so they had won 5 in a row. They go home. They're looking to finally play well in front of their fans at home, which they haven't done a lot this season. And they're swept by, the team that they obviously, had some history with prior this year. And I think more than anything, it was just them running into good pitching. I mean, you saw them come back, last night and score 7 runs against the Rockies. And granted, the Rockies pitching staff hasn't had the best year, but I think for them it was just a good way to kind of bounce back quickly and rebound from a tough series. We did see a lot of close games, another 1-run loss, and things that we've seen before. But really, when you look at it, I mean, the Royals are one of the best teams in baseball, obviously, and the A's played well. Their defense kind of hurt them at times. But all in all, I mean, it wasn't a bad series, and they came back and put together the type of game last night that we had seen the previous week, against the Rangers and during that 5-game winning streak. So I think they're feeling a little bit more confident about what they have, and I think a lot of that has to do with the bullpen's recent improvement. The defense has been looking better, and the starting staff, of course, is always going to keep them in game. So I think just from the standpoint of knowing, hey, we have a good team, we are clicking on all facets right now, you can just kind of sense a different feeling in there, and you're seeing it on the field too.
I was going to ask you, I don't
see every game, and I don't even read every single box score. But has the defense been a little better, or is it still much the same as we were seeing the first couple months?
You know, it's been better. I think if you look at the numbers and you might see, you're still seeing that, you know, error per game, and some have hurt them, some haven't, but you're not seeing, you know, the same just, I mean, before it was a lot of sloppy play, and I think they're looking cleaner on defense. Marcus Semien in particular, even though he does have, I think he made his 24th error last night, you know, he's looked a lot better. His throws are better. You know, he's always had a ton of range, so he's going to get to more balls than maybe other shortstops, and I think that's where a lot of those errors come into play. You know, because he is getting to those, and then maybe he's rushing a throw every once in a while. But, you know, just in the way he's turning double plays, just looking a lot more smooth out there, I think he's gaining confidence from that because, I mean, that could wear on you. You know, when you know that, you know, day in and day out, you know, you're the one that's kind of not letting the team down, but, you know, maybe making a play that comes back to haunt the team. I think, you know, that was maybe getting to him a little bit, and I don't think you really sense that anymore, and you're just seeing, you know, a better all-around confident shortstop out there. And, you know, him in particular, seeing his improvement after working with Ron Washington, I think it, you know, really has made a difference.
You know, when this team was really going bad, and that was for a long stretch there at the beginning, we kind of turned our attention to, well, you know, what does the rest of the year hold and who might be moved and what sorts of things might we expect toward the end of July? Well, here we are at the end of June, and man, was there a juicy rumor this morning, and I mean, kind of a frightening one, I would think, for Oakland A's fans. What can you tell us about any Sonny Gray rumors?
I think a lot of that goes back to social media and just how crazy the Twitter world can be. I believe it was, you know, whether it was a fake account or just a false rumor, there was something out there that Sonny Gray had been traded to the Dodgers. And, of course, you know, fans everywhere are freaking out, and rightfully so. But it's completely false, and he's just been scratched tonight because he's got flu-like symptoms. You know, there's no I'm not sure when he will start again. I'm assuming in the next few days once he feels better, but he's still an athletic. He is just not pitching tonight. So I know A's fans have had to endure a lot of shocking moments over the last few months, but this one was not true.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm sure that, you know, it's funny because true or not true really doesn't change your life, right? As the beat writer, you got to jump, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I was out for a run and walking back home, and, you know, I'm getting all these emails asking what's going on, and I'm thinking, what's going on, you know? And so on my way back, I'm making calls, and, you know, I don't have my computer in front of me, but I'm doing what I can, and, you know, luckily came to find out that Sonny's just sick, not, you know, badly sick, but just got a touch of the flu, so they're going to push him back a couple days.
Thank God for social media. More nonsense in our lives. Jane, what about this team now as we head toward that critical time of year? You played a lot better, you know, and certainly you're starting to look a lot more like the team I think Billy Beane figured he had put together. Offense is clicking a little bit, pitching very good. And though the Astros have had this storybook season at this point, nobody else in the division really taken off and playing that well. So what do you think that means for Oakland fans, for Billy Beane, as we head into the month of July? Will they be, you know, they'd be looking to make moves and try and surge in this division in the second half? Are they still going to fill it out for a couple of weeks? What would you guess?
I think they're kind of in wait-and-see mode. I mean, there is a lot of parity in the division, and, you know, no one's running away with it. I mean, as good as the Astros have been, you know, there's still time for any team to catch them. And, you know, you could say, well, if the A's traded a Zobrist or a Clippert or a Kazmir right now, they could get maybe more in return because the other team is getting an extra month of that player before the trade deadline. But I think you know, the way the A's have been playing, you know, you look at their starting staff, it's one of the best in baseball, and it's really keeping them in every game. So to have that type of staff and then to see the offense kind of clicking right now, you know, they're looking really good, much better than before, obviously. So I think they're kind of thinking, well, maybe let's see how this plays out, give it a couple more weeks, and then, you know, at the trade deadline, that's when we can decide, do we need to, you know, go a different route and maybe get something back for one of these guys that we know, you know, we can't retain after this season. And, you know, so I think before it might have been a foregone conclusion that they were going to do this, and now, you know, the way the division is, and things are just different too with an extra, you know, postseason spot with that second wild card. I mean, teams think a little differently. Maybe if that second spot still doesn't exist, you know, maybe the A's act sooner, but because, you know, there is that extra spot, you know, to play in the postseason, I think that has a lot to do with it. And, you know, we've seen the A's before. I mean, in 2012, they were 13 back at the end of June, and they won the division that year. So, you know, a lot of things go into it. So I think for now, I wouldn't foresee them making the move anytime soon. But, you know, it really depends on how things go for them these next couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's no doubt a bit of a precedence for this team in this sort of a spot in years past. Last thing for you, as we wrap up, how's Pat Benedetti? What's going on with his arms? Might we see him back soon?
He just started a throwing program this weekend. Yesterday, he played catch with both arms out to about 75 feet. So he'll progress, you know, playing catch, and then hopefully get on the mound soon. And because he hasn't been out too long, I don't think the team thinks, you know, he'll need to throw too many bullpens before maybe, you know, making one or two rehab appearances and returning. So we're probably looking at, you know, a couple of weeks at least before he's back. But the fact that he is progressing at such a, you know, steady pace is encouraging. I think he was a little more concerned at the onset of the injury that maybe it was a little more serious. But, you know, he felt nothing when throwing yesterday. He was completely pain-free. So I think, you know, very good news for him because obviously, you know, everyone wants to see him back.
Yep. One of the fun stories in baseball, as suddenly are the Oakland A's. They've kind of figured things out, got their legs underneath them. All right, Jane, that was good. That was fun. Maybe we can have another kind of upbeat, fun conversation about this team again in another week.
All right. Sounds good.
Well, thanks for joining us again this week. Busy week as always. This has been MLB.com Extras American League West Edition.